I want is all that I can be. And maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly, and so was I. I ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly. And we were born to fly, so was I. But when you live in a world that tells you that you can't, and when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are, in a world that forgets he was born to fly. We were born to fly. We were born to fly.
Same area code. 530-776-5154 or 776-5185 and 876-9919. I am really excited about our show for this evening, as I know that each and every one of you will be as well. This is an incredibly powerful woman that we have with us tonight. And I'd like to share the title of this wonderful book that she has written. And the title is Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying, written by Anna Maria Hemingway. And, you know, when I picked up this book, I was just absolutely amazed. And I have to say that Anna Maria has really brought in some very powerful components in her sharing of her own wisdom and knowledge of a near-death experience all the way through the process of a natural process as of dying. And so let me share a wonderful history about this young lady that has joined us for this evening. Her name, once again, is Anna Maria Hemingway, and she is a PhD candidate and currently writing her near-death experience titled A Mystic Model for Conscious Living and Dying. She also writes articles for various magazines, and her work is primarily, focused on all aspects of conscious living and dying. She is also a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. Her website information is www.practicingconsciousliving.com. livinganddying.com. I'd like to invite all our listeners for this evening to join my show page. I have a wealth of information about Anna Maria Hemingway and how you're able to further investigate this wonderful book that she has written so beautifully for each and every one of us. I know personally it has really enriched my own life and understanding on a very deeper spiritual level. I also would like to invite all the listeners of Pal Talk. I have Anna Maria's name, website, and the title of her book listed for each and every one of your convenience. And if you'll all bear with me, I know the sound is low at this moment, so I do know that Seth is working on the sound as we are speaking. So just bear with us, and we thank you for your patience on that situation. So without any further delay, please help me to give Anna Maria a warm welcome to the show. Welcome, Anna Maria.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
Thank you. It is an honor to have you with us. I want to first and foremost really thank you for sending me this incredible book. And I would like, first of all, if you'd like to share a little bit more about yourself with our listeners. I know that they have been very excited to have you on the show tonight.
Well, I'm getting actually echo feedback. I don't know whether I'm coming through clearly your end.
Yes, you are. I can hear you quite well, and thank you for letting us know. And I know that Seth is working on that as we speak now.
Okay. Well, I guess my background is basically in psychology. I became interested, as most people do, in psychology in general a few years ago, and I actually studied and did an MA in consciousness psychology and followed that up with an MA in depth psychology and myth. And through this process, it so happened that my mother became very seriously ill, and I decided that I wanted to really become engaged fully with her in this process, through which this book came about.
Well, you even yourself had a near-death experience. Would you like to share that experience with all of our listeners for this evening?
Well, I actually, I didn't have a near-death experience. I've had out-of-body experiences, but I have studied the near-death experience, and five of the stories in my book are actually about people who not only have had a near-death experience, but perhaps more importantly, the lessons that they bring back for others to share, and also the way the experience has totally transformed their life, which perhaps, you know, is more important than the retelling of the experience itself.
Yes. Well, you know, it's really interesting when you mentioned about having an out-of-body experience. I have, too, and boy, was that ever an experience, because I was consciously aware as I was entering into my body again. I actually touched my physical body with my right hand, and boy, was that ever an awakening for me. And I understood the terminology of our eyes are the window.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just quite intriguing. So let me ask you this, Anna Maria. What are the lessons that you personally have observed from these near-death experiences?
Well, I think in Western society, certainly, not so much obviously in cultures where Eastern religious beliefs are practiced, that we tend to view death and dying now as the ultimate failure, you know, when medical intervention can't prolong life, when plastic surgery or cheating the years just isn't working anymore. The whole idea of death has been lost as being part of a natural process of the cycle of life. And so I think that this is a very important thing that we are told by near-death experience, that actually at the moment of physical death, the soul or essence or whatever you want to call it, perhaps even just consciousness for some people, because by no means having any religious belief is necessary to have a near-death experience, but what these people are coming back and telling us is that consciousness does exist at the moment of physical death, and the near-death experience itself obviously is an out-of-body experience. You know, many people report, like you did with your out-of-body experience, and I think all these experiences are part of the same thing, really. They're opening this veil or this curtain into another form of consciousness. And when they have these experiences, they sort of look at their lives, often in a life review, or perhaps feel all the emotional things that have happened in their life, how their lives have affected other people, what they've said and done, you know, when it's been loving, when it's been perhaps not so loving.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually enter this place of a very blissful state of connection to this higher source. And many are very upset at the fact that they have to return to their physical bodies, but upon doing so, they realize that they do have a mission to fulfill in this earthly existence. And I think part of that mission is sharing the profound experience that they have had and how it's altered their idea of what living life is about. And often this really includes this sense of connection to all beings, which again I think we have lost. And that love itself, you know, within the person is the most important thing that you can share with all humanity and perhaps all life forms. So they choose to live their lives very differently in this context. And I think hearing these stories has also the effect of reminding other people of what they've gained from their experience.
Yes. Matter of fact, I know that you were able to actually hear the theme song for my radio show. And the individual that actually wrote that song had a near-death experience. And, you know, it was such a wonderful experience to actually sit down with him and, you know, listen to his story about, you know, what his life was like prior to the near-death experience and then how it had directly affected him and how he was now on this mission, not only to express, you know, for us to live our lives with joy and happiness on, you know, every moment of our lives, but also in many other forms of expression to get his message out. And, you know, I'd like to share this with our listeners this evening on page 30. The title of Anna Maria Hemingway's book is titled Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. And I'm going to read you on page 30. She says here, a gentle voice called out from this realm of golden sparks saying, what have you learned? The voice was so soft and tender, and yet the presence of divine authority was there. I knew it was the voice of the Son of God, the empowered Jesus Christ. Instantly, a life review unfolded before my very eyes. Key moments when I had shown anger or love towards people appeared like scenes out of a movie. I could feel the hurt of those I had been mean to and saw how these negative feelings had a domino effect as they spread on through others. I also experienced the love I shared with people and how much further that rippled out and connected to me to all things that were wonderful and blessed. I had never before experienced such joy. And I felt that that really enhanced what we were just sharing with all the listeners. But if you'll bear with me, we do have a caller. I'd like to welcome our first caller to the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from, please. Hello?
Maria, how are you? Hi, Jasmine.
Hey.
Your name is beautiful, Anna Maria. I just love your name. It's very moving, sweetheart. I have a question, if I may. I would like to know what did, how it feels and what you go through when you first do the transition of when, you know, your soul leaves the body and what you go from there. Please.
Could you just repeat the question, please?
Sure, no problem. I would like to know is when you, you know, when you, a soul passes from the body, can you give me a little description of the outer experience through the transition that you go through and what you feel? I never had the experience, and I would love to know. Thank you.
Yes. Well, from most reports and accounts are very similar, which is there's a realization that one has moved out of a physical body. Often this is accompanied by perhaps seeing the what we would supposedly say the dead body, perhaps lying on an operating table or at the scene of an accident. So there's this experience of moving out of the physical body and realizing that they are still, that perhaps realizing that their body, in a sense, is what we call death, but that they are still certainly consciously observing what's going on. And then often this being drawn into a tunnel, going through a tunnel and into the light. Some people describe a sort of sense of a little confusion as to what's happening during this transition period. But for most people, it seems that they just experience the fact that they are still consciously moving on away from the body into another realm.
Does that help you? Did were we able to help you with a better understanding?
Yes, thank you. That was very clearly put, and I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling the show, and many blessings to you. Well, I've got another question for you. Just a moment, please. For all those listeners that are just coming in and tuning in to the Universal Spiritual Connection, our wonderful guest tonight is Anna Maria Hemingway. We are talking about her wonderful book titled Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying. And I invite each of you to explore my show page. I have a wealth of information about Anna Maria and this wonderful book she has written. And for all the listeners in Pal Talk, for your own convenience, I have placed the website link, the title of the book, and also Anna Maria's name for you. I do invite each and every one of you. I have the book in front of me, and I found this book to be extremely enlightening. There were many things that I had even questioned in my own process on my own spiritual growth, and many, many of my own inner questions have been answered. But Anna Maria, I'd like to ask you, how common are these experiences, and how do the survivors actually change the outlook on their lives?
Well, they're extremely common. Probably a near-death experience happens every day somewhere in the world, perhaps many. I'd like to add, though, that this isn't a new phenomenon. Near-death experiences have been recorded. I think one of the first actual accounts was from the 8th century when a man called the Venerable Bede actually wrote a book about the English church and people, and in it he recounted a near-death experience. Plato, too, at the end of the Republic, in order to illustrate what he meant by his term to his dying disciples, practice dying, also recounted the myth of Ur, which was a near-death experience. So near-death experiences have been with us for many, many thousands of years. But perhaps we're hearing more about them now because, A, they're coming into the news more because people are willing to discuss such an experience. I think perhaps many people have had an NDE and in previous times didn't really like to mention it because people would not be supportive or sympathetic to what they were saying. And when a person has had an NDE, coming back to what I'd say normal, in quotes, life is often very difficult for them because they've had an extremely profound experience and often they had no one to share it with. Things have opened up and changed now. The International Association for Near-Death Studies is a worldwide organization that not only provides a forum for people to discuss and get information on the NDE, but also has done and is doing a lot of research. You know, many members are extremely well known in the field of near-death studies. And so the NDE is probably heard of a lot more now, but probably went on, you know, just as much in a certain way, because we're talking about cultures throughout the world. This isn't something that just happens in the USA or in England or India. You know, records exist from all over the place.
Yes.
So I think that's very important for people to sort of understand that when you, for example, you read a section out of the book just now, and this lady, Tiffany, this was Tiffany's story, she actually saw, you know, a Christ figure or a God figure. Now, many people have different cultural values, and what they call God in all the many guises that God comes in could be a totally different God to the one perhaps you or I believe in.
Yes.
So for them, they would see something that actually reflected their cultural mythology. And so it not only spreads through nations, but actually involves all the different religious convictions that people have. That's one thing about the NDE. The other thing is, I think you were talking about how it affects people's lives. I think it's very difficult to measure in terms of how it affects people's lives, but the one thing that we can see is that people start to live very different lives. And for example, in the book, the first story in the near-death experience section is Ruben's story. And Ruben went from being a real estate agent and banker who had had a couple of failed marriages and was a workaholic and had an NDE that totally transformed his life. And he has spent the last 10 years of his life working with the dying. So this is the kind of transformation that takes place. He now acts as a spiritual counselor with the dying. And all traces of the crippling heart disease that actually gave him the heart attack that led to his near-death experience vanished with no medical intervention. So there's something, you know, very extraordinary going on here, whether one believes in an afterlife or whether, you know, one believes in a continuum of consciousness. That's not really the main point. The main point is that these people have actually been shown something that has such a profound effect on them that their lives are transformed and we can see the results.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say it's very refreshing to know that people such as yourself and many of the people that you work with hand in hand are really diving in and doing the actual research and the documentation. And, you know, great example of you, you know, bringing forth this wonderful book for all of, to share with all of us. And it's about time that it's really taken a serious look at, because I know that, you know, as you had said earlier, you know, this has been going on for many years, and many people around the world have had these experiences one way or another, even if it's just an out-of-body experience, which, you know, to me is very similar as the death experience as well. But one of the things that I wanted to share with the listeners tonight, if I may, is read a passage from page 61, and it says here, and I just love this, so I really felt strongly that I would like to share this with all of you tonight, and it says, occurred to Larry that every religion he knew of had tried to figure out the meaning of life and had essentially reached the same conclusion. And this is the key, everyone. The meaning of life is love. And you've heard me say it many, many times for the past 3.5 years. Love heals and dissolves all things. And this was the key that Larry himself finally understood, beyond any other measurement or what a particular religion or culture our belief system may have shared with us, or we felt we knew, that the golden key is love. And so he says here, his results through his NDA vision is, don't worry, be happy, and feel good. Embrace life. Embrace every moment and celebrate that very moment and allow it to spill into the very next moment as well. What do you think, Anna Maria? That was profound.
Sorry?
I said that was such a profound understanding, because that really truly is the bottom line to it all. Is the meaning of life is love.
I think so, and that passage was actually from Larry Hagman's story, who people may recognize as JR in Dallas or I Dream of Jeannie. And, you know, Larry is a very important story in the book, because Larry had everything that most people think would be success or peace of mind. A successful actor, a wonderful wife, plenty of money, the Hollywood lifestyle. And yet, as he says, he felt this real quest to know the meaning of life. And through his own NDE-like experiences, we see the result of that from the passage that you just read. So I think what the object of the near-death experience, and in fact this whole book is about really, is to try and give people another perspective on looking upon death and dying. And the NDE is just one section of the book. The second section actually deals with people who have been with a dying person and the profound effect that this may have had on their life. And the third section deals with after-death communication, and gives quite, you know, a fairly detailed history. I like to follow everything up that I say that may be theoretical with a real live person who has experienced it, because then I think, you know, for each and every individual it becomes more real. But
yes,
that most of us have fear and anxiety around death and dying, and it's, for most people, with them all their lives. And when somebody does die and they have to go through this process, which we all do, you know, whether it's a pet, a loved one, a child, a parent, during our lifetime, we all have to go through this process. And I think perhaps for some people, that's the only time we ever engage with the idea that death is an integral part of life. And as soon as that is over, we want to forget the whole thing as soon as possible. And my objective is really to just open up this whole arena, you know, open up this whole taboo subject and perhaps give people a very different way of looking at death and the dying process that actually resonates far more with the idea of a transition in a continuum. And, you know, people often ask, how is it possible to imagine that? And, you know, sometimes I think the answer is very simple, that perhaps if we just look at the moon at night in the sky or another planet or the sun setting, and we really imagine and visualize, you know, the truth of what is going on, which is that the Earth is just another little planet in infinite time and space, and we are part of that infinite space and time. And so just by doing very simple things, I think we can expand our awareness about the whole idea of what it is to be living and to be part of this continuum.
I've got that brings up two further questions, but before I ask you two other questions here, I would like to honor one of the listeners, and it's from IM, and she says, as you part from the body, how are you feeling being separated from the physical body?
Well, I think we sort of covered that in the earlier question, which is I think that there is, as a person is dying, whether it's in an accident or whether it's from an illness, the soul or the essence of the person is actually moving out of the physical body. And it's often for the person, perhaps to begin with, a little strange to find themselves still somewhere, but not in that body, but realizing that they are still consciously, you know, existing.
Yes.
And that, again, it's part of a sort of natural process of transition. So I think for most people, it's actually a kind of welcome transition.
Well, I have another question from another listener. Well, it's actually more of a statement, but I'm going to follow it with a question. And she says here, it's from Citrus, and she said, I had a heart attack and was in a coma. Can you shed some light on someone that actually has experienced a coma? Is it a same value that you may find as a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience?
Well, my answer to that is I think all these experiences, whether we have some sort of psychic feeling or whether we have deja vu, if you want to bring it down to a very simple level, whether we have a near-death experience, whether we're in a coma, we are just piercing the veil. What we're doing is we're sort of like crossing from one area into another. And some of these experiences are much more profound. Like the near-death experience is obviously much more profound than some sort of psychic awareness for people. But nevertheless, they're all coming from this same place, this same sort of expanded form of consciousness, if you will. So that's how I kind of view it. And I have actually talked to people who are in comas. And again, it would appear that the person is not hearing us, not seeing us, you know, totally not conscious. We call them unconscious. And yet I have spoken to people that have been in a coma for maybe 5-6 weeks, perhaps longer, and they will start recounting how they were conscious of certain things. You know, they could hear people. They did know what was going on. So again, you know, there's something, I think there's always something else going on. And one of the things that they always say in hospitals now is even if a person appears to be unconscious, you know, be very careful about what you're saying because that person can hear you. Their consciousness is not fully in their body, as in, you know, talking and sitting up and whatever, but they're not unconscious.
Yes, and Citrus has agreed with that. She says, I could hear and see everything. Yes, that is so true. And you know, it's really interesting because I was recapping, you know, when I shared time with my father when he was going through his own transition. And, you know, I walked in the room, and first thing I said was, hi, Pops. And he immediately responded to me. And, you know, the family, of course, was quite surprised because he had not responded to, you know, to any of the other family members or to the doctors and nurses that had been caring for him. And then I walked in, and the moment he heard my voice, he actually sat up out of bed, I mean, you know, sat up in bed and requested that, you know, I give him kisses. And I thought that was just so profound that he could actually listen to me as I talked with him and had made a direct request from me, even though he was in that state. And so I just wanted to share that with you as well. That brings to mind, let's talk about the after-death communication and why it might happen.
Well, I think, you know, after-death communication, again, is very common. You know, most people, when I ask them, not necessarily to do with after-death communication, but when I ask them, you know, have you ever had anything extraordinary happen in your life that you can't rationally explain? And I haven't met a person yet that said no. But often these will be something to do with having, you know, lost a loved one and receiving some form of communication from them. Again, I think that it is far more widespread. Most of us, when somebody that we love departs, do feel some kind of communication or other from them. Why we would do that is because I think that, you know, grief is a huge emotion for the human being, perhaps as great as love. And there's no doubt about the fact that losing a person involves the most tremendous underworld of grief, loss, and suffering. But a lot of that is to do with the fact that, you know, we have lost something. Rather than seeing the person moving on, perhaps, we grieve, I believe, mainly, certainly my experience personally is, because the physical presence of that person is no longer with us. And, you know, and that's something we miss a great deal. But I think after-death communication happens because the deceased person wants to let us know that even though they may not physically be with us anymore, that they are still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I'd like to share this thought with you is, you know, maybe you can expand your investigation not only through the near-death experiences, but also in the areas of you know, other areas such as healing. Because, you know, a lot of times I know when a loved one makes a transition, we all have what we refer to as attachments or cords, you know, and a lot of it has to do with chakra connections. And so when we find, when we have that, a loved one or a dear friend, you know, make the transition, you can actually feel the attachment disconnect from that individual. And so it does indeed have a direct impact on us here in the physical. And, you know, what are your thoughts about even changing the word death or dying? You know, in my own culture, we actually celebrate a transition, And we also wear white when someone is about to make the transition. So there's a whole different approach, because we understand that as a person is making that transition into the spirit realms, that it's also very important to support that individual making that transition into the new spirit world. And so I was brought up with that spiritual understanding, and maybe it's a matter of us changing the word from death, because truly, do you through your own observation and studies, do you feel that it's really not about death? It's about transitioning to a higher level of consciousness.
Well, yes, I totally agree with you, and I think the word transition is becoming more and more widely used. You know, one often hears people speaking of so-and-so made their transition, or that terminology is actually becoming far more widespread, and that certainly in a lot of cultures we talk about, rather than eulogies and things at funerals, we actually talk about celebrating that person's life, and it is not just this earthly, very fleeting existence, but this transition into this continuum of consciousness. And I think that it's probably very important, because people actually understand far more to do with death and dying when they think of it in this term of transition, which, as I say, it is why I wrote this book, because I just know that around my own mother's dying process, I came in touch with all of these sort of barriers that we put up within myself, within my own family, and that I think death, you know, strips away everything that is not important.
Yes.
And we do get a chance, if we can override our own fears and actually be fully present, to get the chance to be our most authentic human selves.
Mm-hmm.
And that chance doesn't come along all that often in life.
Absolutely.
Often, again, on the theme, you know, of changing the wording, I often find it very interesting that certainly in the hospice movement, and I think it's a very wonderful thing that in the United States now every single person is entitled to hospice care.
Yes.
And that, you know, hospice philosophy is that no one will ever die alone. So I think that is very important for people to know. Hospice is, you know, a free service for people to have in their transition, and that often, again, one would imagine perhaps that working in hospice or being in hospice or attending to a dying person in hospice would be, you know, words of gloom and misery and suffering and pain. But often you will hear somebody saying, it was the most beautiful, wonderful transition, and that beauty, these are the kind of words that we often hear at the miracle of birth, you know,
mm-hmm.
But at death, we're not so likely to envisage that those words can be used, but, you know, this really sacred transition takes place, and often, you know, there is that calm, peaceful beauty to it. And again, I want to stress very strongly, I'm not suggesting for one moment that grief and suffering is not a huge part of this, because for the human being it is. And it's something that has to be worked through, and it's something that's very painful. What I'm trying to say here is that there is something else going on, and you know, if we are available to be open to that, we have a whole different sense of perhaps this dying process being a transition, a natural part of the cycle and rhythm of life. And we're reminded of this natural cycle, you know, through nature every day, with the rebirth of spring, with what goes on around us, that we see these constant cycles of birth, death, and rebirth. And, you know, for many ancient civilizations, they saw all this, and because they were more connected to these natural rhythms rather than being set apart from them as we are now and as we live now, they automatically imagined, well, if all this is happening out there, then we too must go through the same process. And I think that this is the place that we have lost. So we are not thinking of this as being a natural process. And, you know, most religions all sort of are saying the same thing, or sacred texts. I think human beings actually, you know, redirect religious beliefs to suit their own cultural backgrounds or cultures. But in essence, the actual sacred meaning is always the same meaning, whether we look at myth, whether we look at nature, whether we're looking through the books of the dead, whether we're reading the Bible. You know, they're constant reminders. Doesn't matter what religion you are or whether you have any religion. You know, pagans in early times had far more of a feel of this natural rhythm than perhaps we do now.
I agree with that. You know, it's really interesting because, you know, once again, you know, we work so diligently every day to let go of a lot of the programming and misperceptions and what we've been told through our own, you know, religious foundations or our belief systems that we've incorporated. And of course, as you and I both know, as you continuously evolve to a higher level of consciousness and understanding, then of course, you know, our views and attitudes change on a lot of things. You know, I always tell the listeners, a lot of it is based on attitude, is your perception on how you choose to look at things. And, you know, what have we been taught about the word death? It has such a negative feel to it and vibration to it. And so, you know, it's your work that you've been doing is extremely important for everyone on this planet and for all those that have been really working with you. And I really personally want to thank you for bringing this book forward. I found it extremely refreshing, yet very moving and loving. I actually learned quite a few things as well as I went through the book. And you did such a tremendous job just by sharing real events that have occurred with, you know, people from various cultures and belief systems. And I just wanted to remind all of our listeners tonight, our wonderful guest tonight is Anna Maria Hemingway. The title of this book is called Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying. Her website is practicingconsciousliving.com, and you will find the link and a picture of her book and a lot of other wonderful information about Anna Maria. And for all the listeners in Pal Talk, I have got all of that information listed for you there as well. On that note, Citrus shares a thought with us, and she says, everyone had something like this happen, but I was told to never talk about it, even though she believed in such things. Thank you for sharing that thought with us. Once again, she says, do people ever say they didn't want to go back to their body? I know I didn't want to.
Well, I think this is one of the most common remarks, where going back into the physical body is actually sometimes more painful than anything the person has previously experienced. They actually want to stay where they are. But at the same time, I think as far as all the people I've spoken to, they do realize that they need to go back, that their earthly life isn't complete, that there is something left for them to do. And so they return and often oscillate, you know, between feelings of joy, remembering the experience, and depression at having come back to their body. So there certainly is a sort of integration period. But I think one of the most important things that they're telling us is that, or this is the information that I think they relay to us, is you don't have to have a near-death experience to understand this message. You just basically have to reconnect with the fact that actually life is precious, and we do go through all sorts of ups and downs and bumps and whatever on this journey, but there is a unique mission for each of us. And I think that the near-death experience often, you know, have led a very different life and changed their life to something that has more value. Mm-hmm. And I think these stories actually give us the possibility sometimes to reflect on our own lives and think, you know, am I really doing what I want to do? Am I doing, you know, what I feel my purpose is? Am I using the gifts I've been given? And for a lot of people, it really is a wake-up call that they're not, that perhaps their lives are devoid of authenticity, that they are not.
I agree with that, Anna Maria, because it was when my father was making the transition is the turning point for me personally. And that's when I chose to be more consciously aware of my spiritual growth and journey. And it was really interesting, too, is because I started looking at life a whole lot differently. I really understood and appreciated family, friends, even my next-door neighbor. And I found myself choosing to embrace people more with love and kindness and compassion, understanding. And it doesn't mean that there are days that, you know, I call them my bad hair days or flip-flopping like mm-hmm. a fish out of water, because I have those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes us human as well. But it was my father's transition that really opened up my eyes at a very deep, deep core level. And I've worked on conveying those messages even to my siblings. And it was really interesting because there's 18 of us, but I was the one that really deeply took a look at that and said, wow, I choose to be more loving and more giving every moment of my waking hours. And and seeing, it just takes a moment to show a moment of kindness or even with a smile to someone else. And I'm so pro-life. Celebrate life. Get excited about it. You know, remove all those blocks that keep us from really celebrating life. And it's not to say that I do not have to stay consciously aware of it, because I do. But before we have to say goodnight to you, I would like to honor one of the listeners, and it says here, my dad was in the hospital for 3 months. Me and my mom helped take care of him there, so I do recommend it. It helped us a lot coping with his passing. Thank you so much for sharing that thought with us, and I will agree with that 100%. It really changed my life in a very profound way. Wow, Anna Maria, can you believe it? We're already have to say goodnight to each other. It has been a real honor, and I honor your work. And I keep in touch with us and let us know your future plans and books that you're out there writing. And if we can ever be of service to you as you have given to us, please let us know.
I will. Can I just briefly mention where the book is available from?
Absolutely.
The book is Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. It's published by O Books, It's available through any of the Amazon sites, via any good bookstore in the English-speaking world, and through, you know, several online booksellers too. And if anybody wants to get in contact with me personally, with any questions or anything, they're welcome to write to me. My email address is annamariahemingway@gmail.com. So I always am happy to answer any questions that people might have.
Thank you for sharing that with us. And I also want to let all the listeners know that I also have both places that you can actually purchase the book on my show page. I also have Anna Maria's email address listed there as well for all of you, and feel free to, if you have any questions or would like to explore more about this wonderful book titled Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, I will have that information posted for the next 4 days. So please remember that you are welcome, and I invite you to onto my show page. And all of you Pal Talk listeners, you actually have the information. It has been a real honor, Anna Maria. We thank you for your great works and for sharing your wisdom with each and every one of us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank
it's
you.
It's been great for me to talk to you too.
Oh, wonderful. You, many blessings to you, and have a great night.
You too.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
I just want to say to all my listeners, I really am very grateful and appreciate all the love and the support that you have always given to this show and to myself and to all the guests here. Always remember that everyone's voice has volume. It has something very important to share with all of us. So always carry this strongly in your heart. I want to bless each and every one of you and remind you that the 12 levels of InSoft is still available to you, and all the Power Beyond classes, I have that all listed. Please go take a look at that. I know that the next class is coming up in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and Phoenix, Arizona, Los Angeles, and Tokyo, Japan. So keep an eye for Todd Stockwell. Good night to each and every one of you. Blessings.
One day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true, because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly, and so was I. Ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly. Then we were born to fly. So was I. But when you live in a world that tells you that you can't, and when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are, in a world that forgets you must born to fly. That we were born to fly. That we were born to fly.